Welcome back to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Siddon-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest today, Marie Prinz. For nearly 15 years, you've run a remedial reading practice, the Reading Room in Coburg. Marie, tell us a little about the Reading Room. Why did you set it up, and what is it that appeals to you in teaching remedial reading?
Well, in the late 1990s, I had obtained my Ontario teaching certificate, and I supply taught for a few years, and then I decided that full-time classroom life was not for me. And also, there weren't very many jobs available either. And I had taught my own children to read, so I took a few online courses in remedial reading and hung out my shingle. This small business dovetails well with the other work that I do, which is the administration of my husband's expressive arts therapeutic practice, ArtReach.
Yes. What do you like best about this, then? What appeals to you in teaching remedial reading?
Well, it's always very rewarding to see children who come into the reading room and really don't know very much about how to read and are struggling and having a difficult time with it in school. And then to take them along and to get them, hopefully, caught up to grade level and enjoying reading. That's my aim. Well, it doesn't always happen,
life-changing when it works.
It is. It's absolutely essential for children to be able to read well.
You've just mentioned that the remedial reading is not the only teaching you've done. I know you homeschooled your children, and you've been your husband's editor for the papers he wrote in university and when he was doing his master's, and you have edited the reports for the expressive art therapy practice, ArtReach. What do you like best about editing?
Truth be told, I really like editing. If I was younger, I'd study to become an editor. I love rearranging words on a page so ideas are better expressed and flow more smoothly, both my own and other people's work.
Well, recently you've moved into writing for children, picture books and a novel, and that's now in its third draft. What has this transition into a new field of writing taught you?
Oh, it's taught me that writing is very hard work. I took Ted Staunton's course on writing for children and found to my surprise that I could come up with a storyline and put together stories worth reading if I worked very hard at it. It's been a huge learning curve. A novel. Having a degree in English Lit has helped since I have an appreciation for good writing. Reading many, many children's books is an absolute must if one wants to write them. I visit the local library weekly, ferreting out mid-grade novels that might possibly help me learn more about this really challenging work. Also, reading books about the craft of writing. I have found that to be absolutely necessary and essential for becoming a better writer. And taking courses and being part of a supportive writing group in which we share our work, I learn a lot from other writers.
Yes. Can you very briefly tell us a bit about your novel?
As I said, I live in a historic house. It's actually in the shape of an octagon. And when I was taking this course of writing for children, we were asked to write the opening few pages of a novel, a fantasy story. And this particular idea came up of basing it in a house similar to the one that I live in. I happen to know a lot about the history of the house, and so the people who live there, and so I devised a story around that. It's a time travel fantasy.
Sounds fascinating.
I'm in my third draft. It's a lot of work.
Well, I think you're going to finish your memoir piece, are you? Are you going
to
read that
next? At least the next part of it. It's really not great. The whole of it. As summer approaches, the air above the pond surface pulsates with the darting zigzags of dragonflies and damselflies. Two-spot, nine-spot, common whitetail, red-veined darter, green darner. After spending most of their lives underwater as ghostly nymphs, they stealthily crawl up spiky reeds, breathe the night air, and shed their larval skins, which stick to plant stems like see-through clothes on a line. With sun fueling their wings, these ancient insects patrol the pond, devouring mosquitoes, midges, flies, always attacking their prey from below. On sunny days, the air close to the pond's edge dances with the unabashed couplings of blue ringtails riding tandem. Again and again, these slender acrobats form circles and hearts before the female deftly deposits her eggs on reeds below the water's surface. In late summer, as the air cools, ruby spots rest on rocks, chairs, arms, any place warm, and then resume their last-minute pairing before the autumn frost ends their brief lives. These breeding rituals never cease to fascinate us. One day, we watch the non-stop labor of a green darner gliding from stem to stem, never resting in a rhythmic exertion to reproduce another generation before the sun sank behind the cedars. Suddenly, from under a lily pad, a green frog leapt up and swallowed her in one gulp. Only our stunned silence witnessed her transformation from sustainer to sustenance in this peculiar dance of death and rebirth. One moment a dragonfly laying eggs, the next moment nutrients being rearranged into amphibious cells, premonitions of our own dust-to-dust mortality. In my dictionary, the verb observe means to watch carefully, to witness. Silently, from the confines of my chair, I behold the new life of the obscure. Tadpoles, minnows, damselflies, all creatures indistinguishable from another, all alive for just one long moment of a season. Their beauty flickers before they feed the more conspicuous turtles, birds, frogs, toads, creatures of a higher order that parade their own splendor for just a few more seasons. In my ear, observe sounds much like absorb, which is to soak up larger entity in a way that loses much of its own identity. My time by the pond is spent observing life and being absorbed by it. Moved by the saga of the green darner, I reflect on becoming part of a larger whole, part of a universe replicated in the life of this country pond. At times, my monkey mind quiets, the past and future meld into present, and my being hovers, pulsating gently, like the rhythmic undulation of a damselfly levitating near the rushes. The mysterious, relentless passage of time ceases for an instant, and I relax into divine tranquility, sensing dim my cells, my dust and ashes will one day be absorbed into a greater whole, and with relief, all will be well with my soul. Needless to say, this pond has anchored us to our property. We may never own a cottage in a lake district, or take many journeys around this country or another. Instead, from May through October, we enjoy late breakfasts, lunches after chores, and countless coffee breaks down by the pond, or offers us time to finish the newspaper. Lazy Sunday afternoons in our chairs invite us to open a book and drift into a nap. But mostly, we just recharge our spirits through glimpses of the reticent creatures in the water. Have you seen the turtles yet? We ask each other when the peepers announce spring. How many are on the rock today? We inquire in July. All summer, when we carry binoculars with steaming mugs to our chairs, we scan the pond for a yellow-striped nose breathing air, while black eyes warily peer back at us. Or we search for lily pads shifting jerkily as the turtle navigates underwater stems. Right into the fall, we keep watch for these ancient reptiles who climb onto floating logs and bump each other off like children on a raft.
Thank you, Marie. That really was lovely.
Welcome.
So many thanks to Marie. To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to wordonthehills@gmail.com. And thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7.